This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. We've been talking this week about how the healthcare industry is taking some first steps toward tackling a problem that up until pretty much recently has been the responsibility of law enforcement. Human trafficking, people being held against their will and forced to work for somebody else, frequently in the sex trade. Turns out that healthcare professionals are really well placed to spot this. Best guesses are that nearly 9 out of every 10 sex trafficking victims winds up in an emergency room or a doctor's office while they are being held. It can be tough, though, to identify victims, and even tougher to help them once you've done that. From our help desk at WHYY, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein wraps up his series.
There are 5,686 hospitals in the United States. 60 of them have a plan in place if someone who's being trafficked walks through the door. The Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston is one of them. A few months back, nurse Nina Ribeiro thought her shift in the emergency department was winding down.
I had just taken a patient up to the ICU. There was my lady screaming and, you know, it was a typical emergency department night.
Then a young woman, Deborah, not her real name, walked in with her mother, wanting to detox from heroin and saying she'd been raped.
She was Caucasian, well-dressed, clean, blonde. I remember thinking to myself, oh my goodness, what a quote-unquote normal family. Her mom was sitting over here to the right, and I said, hi, nice to meet you. You must be her mom. I'm sorry we meet under these circumstances. And as soon as I said that, I remember very clearly her mom crying, her mom having tears in her eyes.
Immediately, Ribeiro sensed something didn't line up. She'd treated plenty of well-heeled young women who'd been raped, but few who also were involved with heroin. The Brigham's trafficking protocols ask staff to tune in to red flags, any intuition, aware that anyone can be trafficked. In her one-hour trafficking training, Ribeiro had been told to ask open-ended questions to help build rapport.
I remember holding her hand and saying, nice to meet you, I'm sorry I meet you here. Can you tell me in your own words what happened?
Deborah told her a few weeks back she'd started hanging out with a couple. Then the man took her to a hotel. Deborah told Ribeiro she was made to have sex. Deborah said she had sex with 200 men, compensated in heroin.
This young, beautiful girl who could have been anyone's daughter was truly forced to sell her body to more men than you can ever gauge. Then finally, the tears came out, and I just remember having tears in my eyes and thinking, my dear God, does this really happen in this area?
Ribeiro brought Deborah a stockpile, Plan B pills, prevention for STDs, and Ativan for withdrawal.
I gave her a hug, and I told her, you know, I'm very sorry that this happened to you.
She checked Deborah in for the night and told her the next morning she'd see Dr. Hani Stoklosa, one of the nation's leading experts on healthcare and trafficking.
She had been in the emergency department at that point for well over 12 hours.
Stoklosa told Deborah staff psychiatrists had spent the morning looking to land Deborah in a program for substance abuse and counseling. As the day stretched on, the Brigham staff kept striking out. No one had any room. Then Stoklosa heard Deborah had eloped, the term they use for when someone walks out the door.
There's no world where that should be the case. She still has her drug addiction, and she's going to need to get those drugs somehow.
Even though the hospital had failed to help Deborah, this still qualifies as a success story. The reality is that today, human trafficking victims with stories a lot like Deborah's walk in and out of ERs around the country completely undetected. One study found just 5% of ER workers have ever been trained to deal with these patients. 73% of ER docs and nurses don't even think their patients are affected by trafficking. Stoklosa says today, most services for victims are short-term and poorly funded. It makes it hard for doctors and nurses to interrupt the cycles of violence and exploitation.
If a victim of trafficking identifies, hey, I want to get out of this situation, I want to get sober, I want to leave my pimp, what do we have to offer? And the short answer is very, very little. We're in this position where if we uncover that trafficking is going on, we need to have those resources in place that will match what they've been getting from their trafficker in a way.
Stoklosa says trafficking meets critical basic needs like food and shelter and, as dysfunctional as it may be, a kind of emotional connection, at least for some people. She worries asking patients to relive these traumatic episodes without a social service fix puts these victims back in danger.
On one hand, it's critical that we identify victims of trafficking because there are very few opportunities they'll have to get out of that situation. On the other hand, if we don't have the resources there, then we burn that bridge.
That's one reason so few hospitals are investing in doing this work. It makes little sense to identify human trafficking victims if it leads to little more than people sharing their heart-wrenching stories. Plus, no one can say for sure if it's 1 in 100 patients being trafficked, 1 in 1,000, or 1 in 10,000. And yet, a handful of hospitals and doctors in Hawaii, New York, Texas, and Massachusetts have stepped up, opening free clinics for victims of trafficking.
I think all of us in the healthcare arena would say this is a reasonable kind of charitable contribution back to the communities in which we live.
That's Ann Prestipino, an executive at Massachusetts General Hospital, who supports the hospital's new Freedom Clinic for trafficking victims just across town from the Brigham, where Deborah got her care. Clinics like MGH's run on grants and other soft money, and that leaves them vulnerable. The first trafficking clinic opened in L.A. to only close after funding dried up. Prestipino understands how limited healthcare's response has been so far, how people like Deborah walk out the door. But what's happening slowly, she says, is understanding that Deborah's real, not some urban legend. She remembers when domestic violence was as subterranean as trafficking is today.
I'll hear the stories of the battered wife who finally has the courage to escape, and that's where it has to start. It's creating the awareness that, you know, this kind of problem exists.
What hospitals and doctors are doing, she says, is diagnosing patients as victims of human trafficking. That's new. It's a beginning. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Awareness of human trafficking is growing, as are the resources to help, as Dan has been telling us all week. We put together a list of some of those resources. It's on our webpage, marketplace.org.